So today, we're going to explore a little bit about Galatians and Hebrews and idioms and translations and things of that nature, and why it is that though the scripture is handed down to us through Protestantism, you know, the King James Version and such, even though it's a good translation for what it is not a perfect translation, and the only perfect writings are the original autographs done by the apostles themselves who wrote those autographs. And those manuscripts, of course, if they exist, we don't know where they're at. Maybe they're buried beneath the Vatican somewhere in Rome or someplace, or maybe they've been destroyed, or maybe they're just hidden to be revealed in some later time, like the Dead Sea Scrolls. But whatever the case, we do have much manuscript support, though, of copies of the originals. And from those copies of the originals, we have a pretty good idea of what the originals said. And this is regarding the New Testament, of course, because the Old Testament, we have the original five books, and because those have been so meticulously preserved that even though we don't have the very original one that Moses himself wrote, but the copies were so meticulously preserved of the Old Testament, of the first five books in particular, that the chances of anything being missing is very minuscule, especially since there's all kinds of amazing codes and stuff that are buried in the Torah. And I think the reason why we have these amazing codes in the Torah scrolls is just an evidence in this generation that it's a divine signature, and that we can rely on, and we can compare all other manuscripts against. And so when we come to the New Testament, we find that they weren't so meticulously preserved as the Torah scroll was, then we understand that's because the Torah scroll is supposed to be our foundation. And then the New Testament is to be understood through the writings of the Torah. And so Father gave a perfect preservation of the Torah, complete with vowel points and everything, so we could even remember the language. But then when it comes to the New Testament, we have testimonies given of people. And in their testimonies, they give different versions of the events and what they saw. And through putting all the testimonies together, you have an overall view of the general idea of the way Yeshua's ministry unfolded, and of the things he spoke and the things that he did. And then you have the witnesses written in the letters, the book of Acts. And then after that, we have the epistles that were written to various assemblies throughout Asia and the Middle East that were addressing specific issues going on at those congregations, and that were never meant to be given as scripture, but as instruction to address certain issues. So, for example, like in Romans 13, you have an issue where it talks about those eating meat and then those who only eat vegetables. And if you go to modern-day commentators, they would make that sound like that means the dietary laws are done away and you can eat whatever. But if you read the context of that, it's specifically dealing with those who grew up eating meat, like the Jews, and who partook in the temple sacrifices, and in Judaism, where, you know, it was just a given that it was okay to eat animals, certain kinds of animals, lambs and goats and beef and things. And then you had people from Greece, for example, who came out of the Greek culture, or even Jews that had come out of Greek culture, who had adopted and bought into various Orphic mystery type religions in the Greek culture, where it was an abomination to eat animals because they literally worshipped the animals. And so they did not eat animals. And now some of these people from these Greek mystery religions were coming in to the fold as believers, as vegetarians. And so they had a difficult time struggling with the idea that it's okay to eat meat. And so that's where Paul's letter comes in. It's a specific instruction to a specific group of people in Corinth, in the city of Corinth, that had this discussion about, well, these people who are coming in who just eat vegetables, should we compel them to eat meat, or should they be left alone? And Paul's answer is like, well, the scriptures are clear that we may eat meat, and if we do eat meat, these are the ones we can eat. But it doesn't say you shall eat meat, you may eat. So if someone eats meat, that's fine, but if someone eats only vegetables, that's okay too, if they want to be a vegetarian. And so that's a simple answer to a little bit of a challenging question at the time. And of course, in today's world, through Catholicism and various things that came out of that, we've been trained today to think that it's discussing the dietary laws. And but of course, the dietary laws, that would make no sense comparing it to a vegetarian. It's, the reason why it's compared to vegetarian is because vegetarian is struggling with meat eating of any kind. Whether it was clean animal or not, it didn't matter to the vegetarian. It only mattered to the vegetarian that it was an animal that was being killed and consumed. Whether it's a snake or a fox or a goat or a lamb, it didn't matter to him. So he who eats vegetables, let him eat vegetables. He who eats meat, let him eat meat. It's okay, as long as they eat kosher meat and not something that's forbidden. And so these are some of the things that we come across when we're dealing with the New Testament, is we're forgetting to compare it to the Torah, to the foundation, to that those manuscript sources that were meticulously preserved down to the very jot tittle. Like Yeshua himself said concerning the Torah, he said, "Not the least stroke of a pen, jot or tittle in our English translations, shall under any circumstance pass from the Torah until all things have been brought to completion." And so literally, we can have absolutely 100% confidence in this original Torah scroll, these writings right here, because Yeshua himself said, none of it will pass. Not one little stroke of a pen, one little dot, none of those things will pass from that Torah scroll. So if we have any questions about anything, we can go back to the original Hebrew of those first five books, and we can with confidence make a sound decision comparing what the New Testament says with what the Torah scroll says in the Hebrew. And if it agrees with that Torah scroll in the Hebrew, then we know that we've found a proper interpretation. And it's interesting because when you find the proper interpretation, then you can go to the Greek manuscripts and find out in every single case that there's a lawful way to translate the Greek that matches what the Torah says. But as what has happened over time is they have found an alternative way to apply the Greek, which goes against what the Torah says. But it'll be the same word, and you can go even do it. Even a layperson can go and study these things and these concepts in the Greek. They can look up a word, they can see how it's been translated, but they can see the alternative translations and see if they would have used the alternative translation, it would have matched what the Torah says. And so you have these biases built in there, but the Greek actually clears it up. But first, you have to know what the Torah says in order to make that that conclusion accurate. So here's a few things that we can clear up by comparing things to the Torah and then to the Greek. And I'm just going to go over these in brief, but so that you have the basic concept, and then from there you can do your own research, and you'll know what to look for when you do your research. But if we can go to Colossians chapter 2. This is one of those common things that we can kind of scratch our head over when we read the Torah. Why is it that this doesn't seem to agree with what the Torah says? So chapter 2, verse 16 and 17. 16. "Therefore let no one judge you in food or in drink, or regarding the festival, or new moon, or Sabbath, which are shadow things to come, but the substance is of Christ." Now that's New King James. Does anyone have a King James? Do you want to read out of the King James and see how that one reads?
At verse 16?
Yes, 16 and 17.
Okay.
Chapter 2.
"Let no man, therefore, judge you in meat, or in drink, or in respect of the feast day, or of the new moon, or the Sabbath days, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Messiah."
Okay. So, when you read that, what does it sound like? Doesn't it sound like that? This is what people usually tell me they think it means. And you tell me if that's what you've heard people say too. "Therefore let no one judge you or food and drink." Oh, that means if you're eating a pork chop, don't let anyone judge you for that. Is that what you've heard people say, pretty much? Eat shellfish, shrimp, pig meat, whatever, crawdads, lobster. Yeah, no, what do you judge me for? It says right here, not to let anybody judge me in food or drink. or regarding a festival or a new moon or the Sabbath. So then they're saying, they seem to be saying that if I don't keep a festival or a new moon or Sabbath, don't let people judge me for that. So already you already kind of have a problem right off the bat, because one is, don't let someone judge me for engaging in something, some kind of eating behavior, but then don't let them judge me by refraining from something else. So there's already a contradiction right there. It's like, how is it that it can be telling me not to let people judge me for engaging in one activity and refraining from the other? See, people normally talk by saying, if this was a normal conversation, the way people normally talk, it would be more like, if it's telling you can eat anything, then it will also be telling you can celebrate anything. Or if it's telling you can't eat anything, then it will be telling you that you can't celebrate just anything. See, it will work the same on both counts. It wouldn't be giving you license on the first half and then taking license on the second half. So anyway, that's just kind of a small detail. It's just a little tiny red flag that if you're reading, it's like, hold it, that's not generally how people talk. Or if you're giving a discourse, you don't usually do two opposites within one breath like that. But here's the problem. If it's saying, don't let anybody judge you for eating a pork chop, if that's true, well, that's a direct violation of the Torah. Well, we have a problem here. Because if Father told us not to eat certain things, and now he's saying that we can eat anything, and don't let anybody judge you for eating whatever, so therefore that which was a sin is no longer a sin, then how is that justified in a court of law? Because there's a consequence for sin. That means that if we've violated this law before by eating things that we're not supposed to eat, and there was a consequence assigned to that, now if you do it, there's no consequence assigned to it? So if at one time I commit adultery, it's a sin, but now if I commit adultery, it's not a sin? So it doesn't make sense to apply it to other things. Or, okay, before stealing was wrong, but now stealing is okay? Or before it was wrong to lie, but now it's okay to lie? Because if the dietary laws are done away, well, then who's to say that the rest wasn't done away? Because that's what they indeed say. They say it's all been done away. All those Jewish laws have been done away, right? So you have all kinds of contradictions. But yet Father said that there's certain things that are good for us to eat, and there's certain things that are not good for us to eat. So if now he's done away with that, that's one problem, because now there's a contradiction in his standard, because he's applying one standard to one generation, but a different standard to another generation. So that would make him an unjust judge for assigning the penalty to one generation that he assigns no penalty to another generation for doing the exact same thing. Now, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to go before a judge like that for anything that I want to put confidence in my walk. But the scriptures say that Yehovah, that he's the same, that he changes not, right? If he doesn't change and his character doesn't change, well, let me tell you, if in one point in my life I believe it's okay to do drugs, does that make me one kind of a character? It kind of sets what my values are, doesn't it? But what if 20 years later I don't do drugs anymore and I don't believe in doing drugs anymore? Does that mean I changed? I had to change in order to make that kind of a value system change, is a change in my character. If I'm a person who abuses drugs and then 20 years later I'm a person who no longer abuses drugs, it's because I have a different character now. I have a different view. I have a different standard. But the scriptures say that Yehovah changes not. If he doesn't change, then his standard doesn't change. And what he requires of people doesn't change. He says that he is not the Elohim of confusion. If he changes things, He applies one standard to one generation, and then another standard to a different gender, and one standard to Jews, another standard to Gentiles, or whatever. Well, now he's become an author of confusion. But if he changes not, then what he taught one generation is what he teaches every generation. What he teaches one group of people, he teaches all people, whether Jew, Gentile, Greek, Scythian, or barbarian, doesn't matter. Okay? Male, female, it's the same standard for all generations. And that would explain why it is that in the future, when he says that when he comes, and he says that though in Isaiah 66, he says that when he comes, that those who eat pig's flesh, swine's flesh, and eat the abomination, and worship the idol in the garden, that they shall be altogether consumed at his coming. So that seems kind of like it would be a pretty harsh judgment to make people, to tell one generation, okay, if you eat these things, there's a consequence to tie, but now there's no consequence. But guess what? Even though I told you there's no consequence for this, if I see you eating one of those when I come, I'm going to consume you in my wrath. Sorry, I tricked you. Okay, see, it doesn't work like that. Now, for us, it doesn't make sense that there could be condemnation just for what you eat. But this is our weakness. Because the whole reason why this earth has come into the turmoil that it's in is because we ate something that was forbidden. It wasn't a piece of meat. It was a fruit. A fruit of a tree is all it took to create all the crimes, every rape, every child molestation, every drug deal, every murder, every backbiting, lie, gossip, slandering, injustice, oppression of the poor, hatred, all of these things came from that one act of disobedience. And that one act of disobedience involved our appetite. So yes, it is important what we eat and what we don't eat, because actions have consequences. If there's a certain order set up for how something's to work, then if we act contrary to that design, there's natural consequences. It doesn't mean that he's mean. It doesn't mean that he's trying to keep something. It's that he created things with a certain design in a certain order. And for those things to work perfectly as he intended them to, it means we have to walk in alignment with those laws. So, when we think of a pork chop, it's, well, what's the big deal? It's just a pork chop. Well, what is the big deal with a single fruit on a tree? It's a forbidden fruit of knowledge of good and evil. It had major consequences. The whole earth went into a spiral of death from that one act of disobedience. Okay. If I design an automobile to use a certain type of oil, and I put the wrong oil in it, or I take the right oil and I put it in the wrong hole, how long is my car going to run? So food is designed to make our bodies run a certain way. And he also says that these bodies are the body, the temple of the Holy Spirit. So if these bodies are his temple, then that tells us he owns us. And if he owns our body, then he determines what goes in it and what doesn't. It's not for us to decide what we want to eat. You can kind of see, well, we would never do that with something else. Why would we do it with our own body? We wouldn't do it with our automobile. Why would we do it with this? And so it's the same with our body. He gave us these bodies on loan. And he said, this is what you put in your body that will make it work properly. But if you put these things in your body, it won't work properly. And he says, if we defile his temple, then that temple he will destroy. Okay, so that's kind of going one direction. Now, it's not so much that eating a pork chop is a bad thing, so much it is that it has toxic flesh. And if we put toxic things in our body, it's going to break it down faster. Okay, and it also means that we didn't trust him. So if we didn't trust him, well, that's disobedience, right? That's not an act of faith if we don't trust him. Okay, so that was a little bit of a rabbit trail there, but we can kind of see what happens when we take a little passage here of Scripture and we make it sound like it's saying one thing, when in fact it's saying something opposite. So let me tell you what it's actually saying. Therefore, this is how the Greek, literally, the Greek reads this way. I'm going to tell you how it reads. Therefore, let no one condemn you for eating or in drinking in regard to the festivals, the new moons, or the Sabbaths, which are a shadow of things to come for the whole body of Messiah. Does that still sound like you can eat a pork chop? See, all of a sudden it went from sounding like it has something to do with dietary laws to describe it instead, not to let people condemn you for participating in the feast, for eating and drinking at the feast. It's quite logical. You had Gentiles coming in and celebrating the feast. And they were not coming in through the traditional mode of conversion. Before when they convert, they go converse, they partake of the temple sacrifice, and they do conversion process and circumcision, all those things that attach to that temple process. And once they did that, then they could join in the feast. But these people, they're coming in through Yeshua. They're not coming in to the faith through the traditional avenue. They're coming in through the blood of Yeshua. And so some Jews are saying, well, these people haven't converted properly, and so they shouldn't be eating with us yet. I mean, yes, it's fine. It's good they believe in Messiah, but they still need to go over here and they need to do things the way it's always been done. They need to convert the way it's always been done. But the apostles are saying, well, no, they've clearly been saved. So you people have confidence in this. You can join us in the feast now. You haven't gone through the traditional mode of conversion, but you are one of us now. If you believe in Yeshua and you're reverencing the Elohim of Israel and you're obeying his commandments, then you are welcome at these feasts to eat with us and to drink of us during these festivals, during the moons and during the Sabbaths. So don't let anybody condemn you in these matters anymore. And here it is. This is where we find out what the Greek says, because what this just said actually agrees with the Torah. Can anyone think of anything in the Torah that would go against that interpretation?
No.
No, because the Torah says when we came out of Egypt, there was a mixed multitude with us, right? And they all went to the mountain, they all agreed to the same covenant. So it's for the Gentiles too, who attach themselves to us, not just for Jews. So Gentiles were allowed to come in and join us and celebrate these feasts. So that's entirely consistent with the Exodus and the Passover, where in fact Gentiles had attached themselves to us and they were eating with us, they were drinking with us, and they were celebrating the feast with us. They became one with us. So this parallels entirely things and examples given to us in the Torah. And then, but when you go into the Greek, this is where you find where they were dishonest. Because where it's translated here as food or drink in English, those are nouns, right? Let no one judge you in food or drink. Okay, well, those are nouns. Well, I don't know why anybody would condemn you for a drink, because the dietary laws don't say anything about what you can drink. But yet they assigned this to the dietary law somehow. Okay. So, obviously not talking about the dietary laws. So food or drink, it doesn't even make sense from that perspective. But when you go into the Greek, you know what you find there? You find verbs. They're not nouns in the Greek, they're verbs. Eating and drinking is how it should have been translated. And the commentators, or at least some commentators, actually admit that this is talking about eating and drinking. So let no one condemn you for eating and drinking regarding the festivals and new moons and Sabbaths, which are a shadow of things to come. Now hold it. That's another thing. Now if it's a shadow of things to come in the future, then how can that be done away? It's a shadow of something to come. So that means the shadow has to look something like the reality that's coming. And so if we look in the prophecies, we can see clearly that the whole earth, like it says in Zechariah, the whole earth is going to go up to celebrate Sukkot. In Isaiah 66, it says the whole earth is going to go up from one Sabbath to and one new moon to another to celebrate and worship the King. So, well, those are festivals. Those are new moons. Those are Sabbaths, right? So Tabernacles is a festival, and then you have the new moon and the Sabbath of Isaiah talked about. What's this talking about? The festival, the new moon, and the Sabbaths. Isaiah and Zechariah says that the whole earth is going to be doing those things. And so that's the future, and we're living in the shadow. But this says that the shadow things to come, somehow in English, people conclude, well, it means it's done away. I don't know how they get that out of there. But then they say, because the substance is of Christ, therefore we don't do it anymore. Well, that doesn't make any sense. But if you go to the Greek, it reads, but for the whole body of Messiah. See, they translated substance in mine. I think they translated his body in yours. But the Greek word actually means the whole body. Like, for example, if I was going to say your body with a Greek word, I would be referring to everything. Your eyes, your ears, your nose, your fingers, your toes, your belly button. Your whole body. And like Paul, in his letters, when he describes the body of believers, he describes us all as individual members of one body. You know, some of us are the eye, some of us are the mouth and the tongue and the ear, and so on. So Paul uses the same concept in other writings about how the whole body of Messiah is made up of individual members, and those members make up that body. And this Greek word here has that encapsulated in it, that all these things, the shadow of the things to come, and what's the shadow? These festivals, the new moons, and the Sabbaths are shadows of things to come, but for the whole body of Messiah. But the translation makes it sound like that, well, because these things are just a shadow, well, the reality is it's really about Jesus. It's really about him. It's not about these other things. You can't connect. You can't disconnect the two. They're one and the same. But when the nations on the earth are coming to Jerusalem to celebrate these things, well, who's ruling the earth at the time? Yeshua. He says we're going to reign with him for 1,000 years as kings and priests. So these shadow of things to come is about this time when Messiah is going to be ruling the earth. So how can you separate the feast days, the new moons, and the Sabbath from Christ? You can't. Because the future is his rulership over the earth for 1,000 years, and this shadow of the future includes new moons, Sabbaths, and festivals. It all fits when you compare it to the Torah. And then once you figure out how it should be translated according to the Torah, then you go to the Greek and find out, oh, well, the Greek says it all along. It's English translations, and probably the Russian translations and Greek, they all probably follow the same patterns because the Catholics had their fingers in all of it. Okay, but you go to the Greek manuscripts, and they agree with the Torah, and which in turn agrees with all the future prophecies to come. Now, that was a little roundabout way to go into the details of that. Hopefully that was simplified enough and not too complex to bring out what this is saying, but did everybody follow that? Okay.